It's time for Lunch Hour Reviews.
He was licking me.
What?
He was licking me!
Lunch Hour Reviews.
This man ate until he burst.
So he did die by eating.
Lunch Hour Reviews.
I'm tainting me.
Tainting me!
It's feeding time.
I'm Darren.
And I'm Mindy, and we are the Rants Macabre, now part of the Fangoria Podcast Network. For more information about the network, including other programs, how to follow the show, and find past episodes of the Rants Macabre, please visit Fangoria.com.
For this episode of our Lunch Hour Reviews series, I feel like we're going to be going at half speed.
I know.
I've got a lot of brain fog. I'm exhausted.
I knew I was going to be recording this today, but I apparently just, I don't know. I don't even know what day it is.
I think it's Wednesday. It's Wednesday.
God. Oh, my God.
In any case, yeah. No, the last podcast, you know what? I've been thinking about it. The D-Bag and the Min show is kind of like a psychic vacuum. Like I used all my energy
for that.
And can you imagine listening to it and editing together a show and then a show?
It would just be obnoxious.
By the end of it, I was just like, I don't know if any of this is funny. This could all be a horrible waste of time.
No, I've been studying for finals, and I have my last final tomorrow, and it's on music history, and I don't care about any more music history. I stopped caring in the beginning of the Romantic period. And it's an online course, so I just keep reading and reading, and it's awful.
Did you save everything for the end of the semester?
Yes, because I'm irresponsible. You know that I do that.
You don't have to explain procrastination to me. I was up till 4 o'clock in the morning on Sunday night finishing the podcast. And then when I rendered it out, there were still fuck-ups in the audio clip. Like, at some point, it selected. I'm blaming the computer. The Pontypool clips were shortened almost half their length. So there is that second half length before you hear us come back.
And it sounds like we're just staring at each other and then we start talking again.
Yeah, so that's corrected for the listener who's hearing this. And I don't know, I think Google Play Music might have uploaded the very first version, so the only place to get the corrected version is on iTunes or our website. But yeah, check that out at therantsmacabre.com. This episode, we've got a couple movies to talk about.
It's just a Lunch Hour Review.
We'll try and not make it a competition of yawns. All right. Well, so I actually wanted to jump off at the start and thank Betty Toxic, our fan, who wrote a really nice review on iTunes. That also serves as a reminder that it goes a long way in helping us promote the podcast and sort of getting us through the ranks and growing the listenership. So, yeah, follow suit. Get on iTunes and give us a review. And believe me, especially on a day like today, I am open to criticism.
Are you? Because I don't think I am. There was a little bit of criticism on Twitter recently this week, and I was very closed off to that.
Oh, but that wasn't about us.
No, it was other people. Criticism of other people that we know.
Okay,
and I dislike that greatly. Yeah. So save all your criticism for Darren. Don't give that shit to me. I'm not interested. All right, so right before we sat down to record, we had our mics and everything ready, and then I said, oh, I forgot my notes, and I had to run out of the room and go grab my notes, which I left on my desk, and it sounded like, oh my God, she has all these notes, and she's awesome.
I mean, you keep using the term in the plural form, when in fact it is note.
It is literally a piece of paper with the word women, with the words woman in black on it. that's my notes, whatever. That's how I like to play fast and loose here. But one of the movies that I watched last week when I still had free time before finals was 2012's Woman in Black. And I had never seen it.
Wow, is it that far back already?
Yeah. I had never seen it. It's a Hammer film. Daniel Radcliffe's in it. Basic gothic horror.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess that it was based on the short story from quite some time ago. Mm-hmm. It kind of suits it in being, a very traditional gothic horror movie. it reminded me a lot. Actually, I don't remember which I saw first, Crimson Peak or Woman in Black, but I probably saw Woman in Black first.
Uh-huh.
They share a lot of similarities.
I liked it. I thought it was really worth watching. I mean, it's that cheesy blockbuster horror, so there's only probably so good it's going to be, and I went in knowing that, so I was more than happy with the ghost story, the turn of events. It's directed by James Watkins, who is an English director, and he did The Descent, too. So, I mean, he did other things like Eden Lake, but what I know him from then would be Descent, too.
Oh, okay.
So here's the IMDb kind of synopsis. In London, lawyer Arthur Kipps, who is played by Daniel Radcliffe, still grieves the death of his beloved wife, Stella, on the delivery of their son, Joseph, 4 years ago. His employer gives him a last chance to keep his job, and he's assigned to travel to a remote village of Criffin Gifford, which couldn't be more English, right?
I had a friend in Leighton Buzzard. Like, the Harry Potter names aren't so far off.
Yeah,
and actually,
right?
Speaking of Harry Potter, Daniel Radcliffe is the lead.
Oh, yeah. I said Daniel Radcliffe a few million times. Okay. You're not even listening.
I'm sorry.
I'm talking to myself here. And the listener, because I'm assuming there's only one for this episode. They've already
turned
it off.
There's one listener listening to your note.
It's a sad day. So basically, Daniel Radcliffe, his wife dies and he's having a hard time obviously dealing with it. But this has been a long time ago, kind of. Not that he should just get over it, but like, it's been a long time. You have a job, he's got to pay the bills, and he cannot keep his shit together.
I guess like most gothic horrors, there needs to be a inherent tragedy
of
sort
a young
of under the surface
person.
That, yeah, I mean, it's the reason why he sort of carries himself with melancholy, and yeah, it kind of dictates his, you know, his daughter? It's a daughter, right? Not a son?
He's a son.
It's a son. I am so tired.
I don't know how I'm going to edit this show. I'm really worried about it.
I was just saying the relationship with this child is an important one to him because it's kind of all he's got left.
Right.
And everything else, he's kind of, I don't know, he's like me at work today, kind of having a hard time focusing and doing any good work.
My thing, though, they send him to this house in this creepy, you know, Wicker Man style village where they hate outsiders. And he's has to collect all the papers. I'm confused exactly on what he's doing
there.
Oh,
he's auditing the property.
But he's like even reading letters. He has to read every single piece of paper in the house is what they tell him to do.
I kind of assume that was like he is doing a thorough inventory of the property. There might have been more details in terms of like, I don't know, maybe bank statements and things of that sort that he was sort of looking for. But so in the process, he does figure this, you know, he's putting together the autobiography of this creepy lady in the house and
right.
the sort of tragedy that befell it. And I don't, the house is great. Like
the house is beautiful. The movie's filmed really great.
Yeah,
the whole thing is
movie.
Beautiful. It's, I mean, down to its core, it's a ghost story, kind of actually similar to The Ring. Is that true?
Yeah. I thought, it's kind of like you said, the Wicker Man crossed with the Ring. Mm-hmm. There are a couple elements at play, and I thought it all worked. Yeah, I think it just, there was no point where it kind of really went over the top, defying your expectations and surprising you. Like,
no, I mean, it was everything I wanted to see at that particular time, though, because sometimes, you know, I watch so many bad films and my time has been like so limited. I just wanted something that I know I could like mindlessly watch and enjoy. So that's why I went with the blockbustery Hammer film.
Yeah. And that is right. It was a Hammer film.
Yeah.
They don't make a lot of movies these days, but every once in a while they
surprise
you.
I was kind of disappointed a little bit with it for being Hammer. Like, I thought there'd be really low-cut shirts on the ladies and stuff. There's no, it's not sexy at all. It's the least no sex in this film.
No, it is kind of.
Which is opposite of Hammer, you know?
Yeah, and you know what? My memory of it is it's not exactly humorless, but in terms of like the treatment of it, there's not much lightness at all until like the very end, and that's kind of if you have a very dark sense about it all anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
But
no, it's a shitty feeling from pretty much start to finish. But if you're looking for a shitty feeling and a few good jump scares.
Well, shitty feeling makes it sound like it's bad. It's not bad.
No, it's just
leaves you a little
It's like
drained.
A bummer.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah. good ghost story, good atmosphere to it. Like, they really do, like, the visuals, we talked about this house that kind of, it's really authentic, and, you know, that said, the scares, there's nothing brand spanking new that mm-hmm. you haven't already seen before in a bunch of movies. Although, I mean, the irony is that the short story that inspired this movie is one that I'm sure inspired a lot of other filmmakers to make essentially that movie by another title.
Sure, sure. But it's worth checking out. It was on Amazon, so... It was free. Yay.
And I think the follow-up is on Netflix.
Netflix. It was. So yeah. I'll probably check it out just because I did enjoy this one, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I like that house. The second one's not supposed to be all that great, but it's the same location. And I love the location.
Same
the visuals
house,
there.
Same
yeah.
everything. I loved how in this one, just one weird thing that stood out to me, the house is, when the tide comes in, it's completely cut off from the rest of
yeah.
the town. And that's really cool. If that's a real thing that happens,
yeah,
that would be insane.
It's kind of like a house built in a bog where the slightest bit of water in that atmosphere floods the roads and, well, lends to the tragedy at the base of the story. But yeah, it kind of, the isolation really sets in.
It's like an excellent way to keep your neighbors from, like, fucking off. Just take out the roads.
Take out the roads. They were thinking militarily. So I've got two you could avoid on okay. Netflix streaming in terms of looking for ways to pass the time. I would say skip these two. So the first one is Hellions by Bruce McDonald, who we just talked about in Pontypool.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love Pontypool. Good flick. Really sort of a different take on a zombie mm-hmm. movie. And God knows we need...
It had
takes.
A different feel, a really different feel.
Yeah. Hellions, however, is a completely different animal. The very brief synopsis is that a pregnant teenager must survive a Halloween night from hell when malevolent trick-or-treaters come knocking at her door.
Okay.
And then it kind of expands to this sort of allegory of the decision one makes to keep a child. She's pregnant. It becomes this kind of... Yeah, it didn't really work. It's conceptually adventurous, but then it just kind of gets muddled down by really heavy-handed allegories. I don't know. I wasn't a fan. I didn't finish watching it.
Oh, like, no.
I mean, in all fairness, maybe I shouldn't talk
maybe
about it
Maybe the ending was amazing.
It might have turned it all around, but I don't know. I might go back and watch the last 10
like
minutes just
to see. It's like
that
Alice movie where the end is so great in that. Could be.
The other one is The Final Girl from 2015.
Which I had confused with Final Girls.
Yes, so recently, Women in Caskets did a really good episode on The Final Girls.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, they also had to make the very clear cut...
that this was not Final Girl.
Yes, that one movie is great and one movie stinks. And so, sorry, but The Final Girl with Abigail Breslin is not good. It's directed by Tyler Shields. It stars Abigail Breslin and Wes Bentley, who, yeah, I don't know. Wes Bentley, I
want to talk more about American Horror, but you are not caught up yet. You finally started watching it, and
yes.
you're understanding what I'm saying when I say he's terrible.
Yeah, I feel like even more than Patrick Wilson, he's kind of a one-note actor.
Yeah.
Wes Bentley is a very handsome fella. But,
yes,
he
is very handsome.
Couldn't act his way out of a paper bag.
It's a good thing he's so handsome.
So yeah, the very rough synopsis is that a man teaches a young woman how to become a complete weapon. Later, she is approached by a group of sadistic teens who kill blonde women for unknown reasons. The hunting season begins.
That seems terrible.
It's
I
like
mean,
whoever
it's
wrote this description
synopsis.
Liked the movie even less than I did.
It's like terrible.
Yeah, no, the idea is like this whole entrapment method. It's trying to be La Femme Nikita at one time or another. And then Wes Bentley, they age his character by cutting his hair really short.
Oh, great. Good.
And
excellent.
That's effective. It was really bad. It was really poorly written. It was hard to sit through. It was very low budget. It to boot, so like, yeah, I don't know, they could have just made a different movie. What
they spent everything on Abigail Breslin and Wes Bentley,
probably. But yeah, so those are two to avoid. I hate to be a downer, but yeah, those are, stay clear of Hellions and The Final Girl.
That's
singular.
Terrible.
The Final Girls,
you
is
like
great.
That. Yeah,
it has a great
and
horror
I still haven't
comedy.
Watched
it's
that.
A really good, like, meta commentary on the slasher genre, specifically the 80s era of those slashers. It was really funny, really heartfelt.
So I finally finished, because I've been watching it week by week, The Fear of the Walking Dead. This is the second season. And then I guess the second season is cut in half, and then it's coming back in August, which I'm, it's very confusing.
Okay, well, that's, I guess they got a full season. The, technically the first season was only six episodes.
See, and I thought this was supposed to be, the second season I thought was like the second half of the first season. I hate when they split the shit up. It really, like, they did it with Mad Men, they did it with Breaking Bad. It irritates the fuck out of me. Get 22 episodes, that's a season. What is this 12-episode season anymore?
Well,
I don't
not
like
even
it.
Though it's a six-episode season. I well, half season. You're
yeah,
right. You're
now
right.
We're coming back in August for the second half of the second season. It's very confusing. It took a lot for me to stay with the show.
Yeah,
I'm not going to lie.
I gave up on it. I'm done.
Yeah, I mean, I still did just because I do like that universe and I like that idea. And it started off terrible, terrible, terrible. I would say the first two episodes were awful. More of the same from the first season.
I'm impressed you endured.
You know I watch all sorts of garbage. I just watch to like, maybe something will happen, maybe something will happen. And actually around the third episode, it finally started to find a groove.
Okay.
And what the groove is, and the smart thing that they do, they realize like these actors and characters are not interesting. So what they do is they start putting them to different like docs and having to interact with other people.
It's like Gilligan's
Island. That's what keeps it
it's
going.
A new, like someone
exactly.
else washes up on the island, or in this case, they pull up to a port.
Exactly. So we meet
people.
These other people, which mostly always die, and then they get on the boat and then go on some more. But it's like,
well, they're dead.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Moving on to the next one. We'll go ruin someone else's life. And that's kind of what they do. They're like locusts, and they just go and ruin shit as they go on their journey.
I liked your theory that they're shaping them up to be the bad guys.
Yes.
I really, if it pans out that way, I'll watch it. I promise I'll watch
well,
it.
They recently split up at the very last episode. Their group has gotten smaller because you can't avoid death. And they've split now into two different groups by necessity, not because they intentionally had to split into these two groups. And I kind of think, yeah, one group is bad, bad news because it is all the people who just destroy. They go from place to place and they just destroy wherever they're going. Destroy. Destruction. So I think this could be, you know, when you meet Rick and all those guys, this is a good group. I mean, later on, I think when Rick goes a little too far, they could sort of be seen as a bad group. But I think that these guys here in Fear the Walking Dead, it's the origins of a bad group.
I love that idea.
A group that maybe could become like the cannibals. I mean, not that they're going to eat people, but they were good and they tried to do good things and it didn't work out.
Right.
So this is what they do now.
Yeah. It's a very cool idea. And I guess, in terms of villains and this sort of exposure, Robert Kirkman actually put a lot of work into The Governor, to the extent where like he didn't write it, but there is a novel about like the coming of the Governor. Let me say that again.
all over your face.
There's an outtake. So he didn't write it, but I suspect he at least collaborated. There's an entire novel about the rise of the Governor. And in the comic, he's a great character. He's kind of a perfect shitheel. In the show, they tamped it down a lot.
Yeah, of course. You know, I was so mad about that.
Yeah, he winds up pretty milquetoast by the end of it. But they do love their villains. And Negan's going to be an interesting one, and they've got a lot of making up to do when the Walking Dead normal series comes back. But yeah, it would be great if it is the origin story.
I just
of
think it might
villains.
Be because when I watch it, I notice that Madison, who's the main woman in the show, she's just cold blooded, and she has this guise of protecting her family and this and that. But at the same time, there's like she's just so cold, and I think she could be a really awesome villain. And
yeah.
I think with them split apart, they have a chance to grow in their way, becoming worse and worse, and the other people are maybe the better people. And when they meet up again, I think they're going to be very different, because I think in this kind of a universe, you evolve and you change so quickly, because if you don't, you're dead.
Right, right.
So I think these changes happen really quickly, and even a couple weeks apart, you're at a completely different level than the group that you were just with.
That'd be pretty great. And the angle of like a villainous, you know, mother, the sort of, you know, leader of the pack mother as a villain, I can't think of a particular horror story that uses that formula. I like that a lot.
But we'll see. They'll probably shit on it. They'll probably like just do something terrible with it. But I'll keep watching it. Whatever. I'm a glutton for punishment. Was a
time of the preacher. So not a complete Debbie Downer. I actually got very excited about AMC's new show, Preacher.
Yay. And I've recorded it, but I didn't get to watch it yet.
I've been familiar with the comic for a long time, in all fairness. I only read the first two volumes pretty recently. It was this year. But yeah, so the original comic is by Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon. It started back in 1995. And it's funny how much that dates the comic in terms of the aesthetics.
Oh, yeah.
Interestingly, they've carried over a couple of those visuals for the show. So it definitely, it's got a niche that, I mean, they really committed. So, okay, let me go into it. So people might have heard that Evan Goldberg and Seth Rogen sort of got this project going. And I didn't know Seth Rogen was a comic book guy, but, well, maybe he's less so than Evan Goldberg, but together with Michael Slovis, they presented the show and AMC bought it. And I remember seeing visuals going back like a couple of months. So I think they probably got at least a sixth season, AMC half season in the can. And we got glimpses of it during this the break for the first episode. But in any case, they're pacing the story quite differently from the comic. And it's a little frustrating, but it is a lot of ground to set. So, yeah, so for those who aren't that familiar, Preacher is the story of Jesse Custer, a preacher in a small Texas town who is possessed by Genesis, the infant spirit of an unnatural coupling of an angel and a demon. And so through this spirit, Jesse Custer kind of gains what they refer to as like the voice of God, which cannot be denied. People have to do his will.
Oh, it's like the Force or like these are not the droids or whatever?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. However, like he comes by the spirit in a horrible way. And what they did with that in terms of the show, and I don't want to give spoilers because there really
are visuals
that pay off in the show. There's some pretty great stuff, even in the first episode. But they, like I said, they pace it so that I don't know when the shit is going to properly hit the fan, but I think it'll probably be episode 3. It goes to some really dark places. The comic book for, I guess this was a DC, I think it was a Vertigo book off the side. So it was a independent book that get away with a lot.
Right.
And I was initially reluctant to get into the book because I'm not wild about Steve Dillon's artwork, but the story is good enough that I can stop being an art snob for a minute and really enjoy
That, like, jerk.
I really love theology as a sort of framework for, you know, this really incredible fictional, you know, sort of gods versus monsters and spirits and demons and man trapped in the middle. And I really like this. And this, you know, the original stories go back to the early 90s. So I have to imagine, like, it had a cultural impact in terms of, like, you know, the tastemakers and the filmmaker. A movie like The Prophecy is clearly in the same ballpark. And yeah, so in any case, so Dominic Cooper plays Jesse Custer. You've got Joseph Gilgan playing Cassidy, the Irish vampire. Ruth Negga plays Tulip, and later in the season they show that Jackie Earle Haley is coming into the show.
Oh, wow.
And that ought to be interesting. That guy doesn't get enough work. I think, I don't know if it was Friday the 13th that kind of I don't know, took him off people's radar, but he was under a lot of makeup, and I can't imagine he would have been specifically
horror people's radar, very much so.
Yeah, he was very good in that really offbeat Little Children. Did you see that? I didn't watch that, no. In that he plays a pedophile who's served his time and is trying to, like, get back into society, it's not an easy role, and he is really creepy.
I bet. It. And then he plays Freddy in The New Nightmare, right?
Yeah.
Not in New Nightmare, but in the newer Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, which I didn't see.
I didn't either. I was just trying to sound like I knew what was going on.
Yeah. And I think his big splash was that he played Rorschach in The Watchmen. And that
which
was
I still haven't seen.
Great. Really? You haven't seen Watchmen?
No. It's not. Because it's not on any of the free things that I get.
Okay. Well, if you want to see it, I'll lend it to you. But, yeah, so Jackie R. Haley is someone to look forward to down the line. But Dominic Cooper is great playing Jesse. It's funny. I mentioned the, like, visual touchstones of the 90s that he has. And I guess I've only seen it once or twice before. But the metallic collar corners.
Yeah. He's like John Cougar Mellencamp.
Texas. Yeah.
Like, that's what the preacher reminds me of. It's like John Cougar Mellencamp and, like, Richard Marx together.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's funny, they almost gave him 80s hair. In the comic, he's got, you know, he actually bears a striking resemblance to, like, Adam Carolla in terms of his hairdo.
Okay.
So just in terms of, like, short on the sides, a little long on top, but, like,
okay,
like, I can relate, if my hair gets any longer than short, it becomes a disaster. I don't know, it makes for a very strange aesthetic in the comic, but in any case, Dominic West is a better looking guy than he's drawn back then. I'm trailing off, but
yeah.
In any case,
as soon as you started talking about your hair, like, I started thinking about that, and I was like, oh, now we're talking about Darren's hair.
I'm so tired.
It's the worst episode ever.
So Dominic Cooper, he's playing it at the same pace as the show is going in terms of these small reveals. You're okay. Only getting little bits of this greater picture. And I'm very excited for how they treat the rest of it, because it's kind of prepared to just go balls to the wall crazy, as the story does. But in his case, like, he starts off quite subdued, very modest, mm-hmm. which his character is not. And so, you know, comic book nerds are kind of watching it like, when's he gonna lose it? When's he gonna show a little too much of himself? Because for this preacher in a small town, he has got one of the grimmest, darkest backgrounds that you can think for a human being. And not one of, like, maliciousness, but just, like, just tragedy, inherent tragedy. Mm-hmm. And so you do get glimpses of his bad side when, like, there's actually a surprising amount of action in this pilot show. And you get like this slow motion shot of him inflicting harm and grinning while he does it. It's a really good shot. Look out for that. But yeah, check out Preacher, AMC's new show. I think I'm going to skip Fear the Walking Dead and just stick to Preacher.
Oh, I don't know. I want you to give Fear the Walking Dead a little bit of a chance.
If it comes around, I will, but I'll let you be the judge. And yeah. Don't trick me. Don't.
Well, I do like to trick people.
I read the internet.
I do like to trick people. I want you to finish American Horror first,
and then we can
talk about that.
Yeah, that one I'm very much looking forward to doing, like, an American Horror Story episode. And actually, speaking of new episodes, next week we're going to have Clay McLeod Chapman on the show again, and we're going to be talking horror comic books. Not in a broad sense. We're going to talk about a couple specific books, but look out for that. Clay McLeod Chapman.
Yeah, I'm jealous because Clay is so much fun to talk to, and I'm not going to get to be here.
Yeah, and he's got some cool announcements, and yeah.
You always have so much fun when I'm gone. Okay, so be sure to follow us on all the regular social media. We're on Facebook, we are on Twitter, and we are on Instagram at Rants Macabre. Send us an email at therantsmacabre@gmail.com. I like to read emails.
It's a nice distraction to the horrible work week that we have, just maybe particularly lately.
Yeah. It'll all be over soon.
Shit canned.
what else do we do? Oh my God. I did Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Okay,
yeah,
that's
we're,
all the things.
We've got more stuff coming up on YouTube and our website, therantsmacabre.com.
Yeah. We even segregated the D-bag and the Minge. I had to figure out what we called ourselves for the radio show. And so if you want to listen to it, like as if it was a real show, because I don't know why you would want to listen to it. But if you do, Darren actually just cut out just that part so that people can enjoy that.
For what that's worth, yes. You've been listening to The Rants Macabre, a presentation of the Fangoria Podcast Network, produced by Darren Rosario and Thomas DeFeo, and executive produced by Ken Hanley of Fangoria Entertainment. For press opportunities, advertising inquiries, and information about The Rants Macabre, contact Ken at Fangoria.com. This is me, Darren, signing off.
And this is Mindy. Thanks. This is when we end the show.
That sounds fucking ridiculous.